Welcome, everyone. Thank you for coming. And thank you to our wonderful panelists and Leah Richheimer for being our moderator. So Leah is going to ask questions. She's going to introduce the panelists and ask all the questions. So thank you, everyone.
Okay. So first of all, thank you all for coming out tonight. I know it's a busy. Can you see? Yeah? Everybody can see? All right, we got it coming. So thank you very much, everybody, for coming out. And I wanted to start the night with a question for you. And the question is, have you ever had something really annoying happen or difficult or something that for sure seemed like bad news, and later on your eyes opened and you realized, oh my goodness, that was the best thing that I missed that bus, because if I hadn't missed that bus, I wouldn't have been there at that time, and this guy came here, and this girl here, and blah, 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 and you totally clearly see Hashem's plan. Does that ever, you ever have that experience, and you can see it? Yeah, you can see it, okay. So here's the thing, and actually I'm gonna paraphrase the words of the Meshech Chachma. It says, we all have times that we see how things worked out for the best, and in retrospect, we say, now I see Hashem's plan. But the issue is, can you see that while it's happening? While you're standing there and it's pouring rain on you and you miss the bus, or while you're sitting there and something terrible happens, you're just like, this is the worst thing that ever happens to me. While you're in the thick of it, it's very, very hard to see. And what he gives over to us, he says, as the challenge arises while we're in the middle of it and we're wondering what's going on, if we remind ourselves at that exact time that at one point we did see Hashem's plan, if we can do that in the midst of whatever challenges that we're going through, then we can strengthen ourselves and give ourselves the perspective to understand Hashem has a plan, even if we never find out the reason for it. So I wanted to start out this evening. The evening is supposed to, the title for it is How to Navigate Through the Stresses of Life and Stay Positive. Oh, also, can people turn their cell phones off? Okay, cell phones off. Okay. So how to navigate through the stresses of life and stay positive. This gives us strength to do it. In the middle of it, to recognize, this seems really bad, but can I think now? At time, remind yourself, right in the heart of the thing that's going bad, you remind yourself, oh, Hashem had a plan before. Probably good chance that he has a plan now. So that's one of the things. Before I introduce the first speaker, I also wanted to think there's one thing that I thought might be helpful. Before we even start the program, if you can say, what is the take-home message for me? Sometimes you go and you get inspired, you get chizik from speakers, and we've got quite a wonderful panel here tonight. And you come home and you're like, that was great. What exactly, but before that, I'm giving you the thing to take a note or mentally remember, oh, that is the point I needed to hear tonight. So I'm just giving you that as a little PS so that you can, as you're listening, you can figure out, that's the one. Okay, so I have the very great honor and privilege to introduce Rebbetzin Fermi Krauss. She's a very esteemed Rebbetzin of Young Israel of Hancock Park, and she is the founder and the former principal of Ora Emmett Girls High School right here near Pico. She is one of the most respected Rebbetzins in our community. She's one of the founders of our community, as I'm sure all of you know, and she's a pillar of Chesed that inspires all of us to be our better selves. Please welcome Rebbetzin Fermi Krauss.
Okay, I'd love to say that it's a pleasure to be here, but it's much easier for me in the classroom with my cute little students than with adults. But Rabbi Wolf, who could say no to Rabbi Wolf? That was just like too hard. Okay. So when I looked at the flyer and I started reading all the challenges, and I'm thinking to myself, well, everybody has challenges. Life is challenging. Sometimes they're serious challenges, and sometimes they're not such serious challenges. We don't ask for them, we don't expect them, and we don't want them, but they're there. It's part of life. Living people have challenges. When a doctor pricks you and you feel the pain, It's a good sign. It means you're living. You're alive. So I often wonder when I pass a cemetery and I look at some of the stones and it says, rest in peace. No one's rushing there, you know? That's when the challenges are over. Living people have challenges. We're all part of families. We're all part of communities. Whether it's at work, whether it's at home, wherever we are, whether it's with our children, everybody has, as we call it all, stress, some types of stress. A book that I loved reading, and for a long time I called it my Bible because I found myself reading it every single day, is this book with Hearts Full of Faith. It's based on essays. It is actually essays based on addresses by Rabbi Matis Yehu Solomon, who is the Mashgiach of Lakewood Yeshiva, and somebody put it to writing. I love it. First of all, I identify with so many things that he says because I am a Parsha teacher, and he brings examples of the lives of our avos, and he shows through their lives how they navigated stress, how they navigated challenges, how they reacted, what were their thoughts, what were their emotions. And he says that the amount of ink that the Torah devotes to a story is an indication of how many vital lessons it holds for future generations. And he says that in the book of Bereishis, the very first book of the five books, he says the creation of the world, you know, is this tiny little chapter, small part. The whole rest of the book, the whole rest of that Chumash is about relationships. It starts right away, whether it's with Cain and Hevel, it starts with jealousy, it has the avos, and then it ends off with four parshios about Yosef. And he has the most incredible chapter in here. I'm telling you, it's worth reading. I'm sorry I didn't bring it with me. I had copies at home about how Yosef's life has its, you know how what happened to him, right? So some things that happened to him were just terrible, and then all of a sudden things take a turn for the better. Just when he thinks things are good, again, he's in trouble again, and it's one thing after the other without him ever realizing that the end will be okay. That's only because we know the story, so we know the end was okay. But the truth is the end wasn't really so okay, because even though he became the ruler, after that, we all went into Mitzrayim. We all went into slavery. So it really has so many ups and downs in that story. And he really describes Yosef as a person that you can identify with and really learn from his attitude and how he navigated his stresses. All the stories about our avos and imos are really supposed to be lessons for us in our lives. The Torah minces no words on their challenges, even their mistakes. And they are really lessons for us. So besides looking in the Torah for perspective, how to deal with our challenges, how do we deal with our challenges today? And my question to you is, how can we prepare for them? Can we prepare ourselves for challenges that might come up in our lives? This brings me to the Rambam. It's well known that the Rambam was the private physician of the Sultan Saladin. As long as he was his physician, Saladin never got sick. One day, Saladin said to the Rambam. How do I know that you're a good doctor? How do I know that you're the best physician? I never got sick. What's going to happen when I really get sick? Are you going to really know how to cure me? How do I know that you're really going to know what to do? I've never had a problem. So the Rambam answered, the greatest doctor is Hashem himself. As it says, Kol ha-machala asher samti b'mitzrayim lo asim alecha. All illnesses that I placed on the Mitzrim, I will not place on you. Why? Because ani Hashem rofecha. I am Hashem, your healer. What does Hashem mean by ani Hashem rofecha if we'll never get sick? He just said we'll never get sick, so ani Hashem rofecha. The Rambam explained to the Sultan that Hashem was saying the highest level of medicine, the best medicine, is preventive medicine. That's the best medicine. The best way we could meet the challenges of staying positive while navigating through life's stresses is to work on our emun and bitachon during the good times, to daven on a regular basis, to notice every hashkacha pratis that happens in our lives, to verbalize it to ourselves, to verbalize it to our children. It should be part of a little lingo in the home. And with that, I would like to tell you a few little things that happened in my personal life that demonstrates what I had just said. About 19 years ago, my daughter was expecting her first child. I asked her permission today if I can tell the story. And I was teaching in Torah Emes in the fourth grade, and I get this phone call, not on a cell phone. I get a message from the office that my daughter called, and I asked if I could wait to recess, and they said, no, it's an emergency. And I found out that she was in premature labor. This was a few days before Pesach, 19 years ago. And a good friend of mine, as soon as she heard, and she knew that I'm going to want to go to Baltimore, which is where my daughter was, she arranged a ticket for me, and in no time at all, I was on the next plane out. And by the time I got to Baltimore and I walked into the hospital room, my daughter was sobbing because it was all over. And it was a little boy that was born that didn't make it. And after we finished crying and she finished telling me everything that happened and how awful her experience was, we were sitting quietly and all of a sudden she said to me, you know, Ma, when I davened every day, I thought I was doing Hashem a favor. It was such a pain to daven every day. You know, I had to wake up before chatos. Some days were days off. She meant when she was growing up. Sometimes my friends were waiting for me and you made me daven. I thought I was doing Hashem a favor that I had to daven. Like, he made the rules, that's the halacha, and so I have to daven. It was a burden. What I didn't realize was that I was doing myself a favor. I didn't ask her what she meant, but maybe you can tell me, what do you think she meant when she said, I was doing myself a favor? Anybody? What did she mean by that when she said, I was doing myself a favor by davening every day? Okay. Exactly, and that's what I was thinking, but I was just there to listen, right? That Hashem listens to our prayers, and I think that she felt she was in a relationship, and I think she felt, I discussed it with her a little bit today, and I said to her, probably you felt like I wouldn't be able to live through this if I didn't have an anchor, if I didn't have what to lean on, if I didn't have faith, if I didn't have belief, if I didn't believe that there are reasons for things. My davening every single day, I praised Hashem. I had my requests over years. So we had a relationship. So when all of this happened and I felt like everything came crashing down, I was in a relationship with Hashem, and I just continued that relationship, though I was in tremendous pain. Unfortunately, I say unfortunately because I know so many people who take the heter of mitzvah shezman grama, which means that davening is excusable to those people who are too busy, because it's a mitzvah that's dependent on time. You have to daven before chatzos. And women are not necessarily responsible for those if they can't get to that mitzvah. It's just such a shame to me that someone would give up tefillah. It's such a tool. It's such an amazing tool. It's just such an important part of life. And truthfully, I think that when our Chachamim made up that halacha, it was before we had washing machines, and it was when life was really hard, when we didn't have bakeries, and people were doing a lot of different things at home. I'm not quite sure that talking on the phone with friends would be an excuse, and we can all go under the banner of mitzvah shezman grama while you're schmoozing on the phone and, you know, doing so many other things, even if it's baking another cake or another kugel. It just seems like such a shame that we're not taking advantage of this opportunity to daven and have this special relationship with Hashem during good times, at any time. There's Shema Kolenu, there's Ata Honein L'Adam Das. We're talking about making decisions about some of the questions that we have in life, and you can ask Hashem, help me make this decision. How could we miss up on that opportunity, asking Hashem, give me wisdom. Give me wisdom, help me. I need help today. I don't know what to do. My son is challenging me. I'm in such a dilemma with my boss. Ata Honein L'Adam Das, you bestow upon mankind wisdom. It's an opportunity to express what I'm feeling. Cry if I need to. Can I tell another story? One more? Okay. At the end of my father's life, my father was 90, Baruch Hashem, when he was nifter, so he had a long life. And at the end of his life, we were taking turns spending the nights with him. So one night, I was in the next bed, and I never really slept much. And somehow I turned around and I realized that he's up. So I said, "What's up?" And he said, "I can't sleep, let's schmooze." I said, "Great." And he's lying there with his hands across his chest. And he says, in Yiddish, and I'll translate, says, "Me azay varim in hearts. I feel so warm in my heart. Ich hab gehat a gitte leben. I had a good life. Ich hab aufgestellt a mishpacha vasen in alles shom a Shabbos in Yerei Shemayim. I have children and grandchildren that all keep Shabbos and fear Hashem. And I have had many Talmidim and Talmidot. I have established many students, male and female, and they're married and they have Jewish homes. I feel accomplished." And I'm thinking to myself, I mean, wow. My father had such a hard life. He had such a hard life. But he saw the big picture. He saw the goal. He was so happy with his goal. He reached his goal. He didn't focus on the bumps in the road. He was a young child when his parents got divorced. His mother had to make parnassa by selling eggs. He got married to my mother, had six children. My mother was nifter at 34. And left him with six kids, the youngest being 6 months old and the oldest 13. For many years, he suffered from pains in his head. They were like electric shocks. His wife, at the age of 69, had Alzheimer's for 10 years. Every day he sat at her bedside, said to Hillam, and sang. He had a good life. But he didn't lose sight of his goal, and he didn't focus on the bumps. He felt he achieved. He did. He accomplished. And whatever our goal is, he felt accomplished. I'd like to end off with something that we said in the Musaf Rosh Chodesh today. V'hi ha-chodesh hazeh, let this month be. Sof v'keitz l'chol tzoroseinu, the end, the final end to all of our tzoros. Techila v'rosh l'fidyon nafshenu, a start and a beginning for the redemption of the soul.
Wow, that's a story about your father. Wow. Okay, I'm going to call up our next panelist. It's Mrs. Devorah Lunger from the Valley. She's a certified life coach and grief recovery specialist. She's an advisor for NCSY teens for a decade. She's worked with over 350 LA teens and young adults. She's an inspiring person to know and a graduate of Beis Yaakov Los Angeles. Please welcome Mrs. Devorah Lunger.
So Robinson Krauss pretty much took the time that I didn't want to sit and talk the whole time, so thank you. Definitely not going to be as long. So Leia asked a question when she started, and that was, have you ever had a situation where when you were in the midst of whatever was going on, you felt like, what is this? Why am I going through this? And then later on, you realize like, oh, wow, I'm so happy that happened. Look what happened. It's very interesting. This just happened last night. I got a phone call from one of my clients. She's 14 years old. She called me hysterical. Her mother was supposed to take her to a party at Nana's cafe, and she left without her because she didn't clean her room, and my room was clean, and she's going on and on and on and on. I called the mother, and I said, okay, give me the story, what really happened. So find out what really happened, call her back. And I said, listen, regardless if your mother's right or not, you want your mother to do what you want, correct? So you have to play the game properly. So if you spoke disrespectfully or you didn't clean the room the way she wanted it, say, I'm sorry, Mom, I didn't do it the way you wanted, and end it. Don't continue the fight because it's going to turn out to you being home hysterical because you didn't go to your party because she didn't let you. So I said the best thing for you to do, because you're already not going, is call your mom and apologize. It's a simple thing to do, and it will get you so far. I don't want to. What do I need to apologize for? It's not about right now. It's for the future. You want your mother to respect you. You want your mother to see that you could learn from your mistakes. Just call your mom and apologize. She called her mom. She apologized. Her mother called me this morning, like, first of all, I don't know how you got my daughter to apologize. She never apologized for anything. And because of that, she's giving her X, Y, and Z. And she tells me that last night, her daughter, a family, very close family friend, was making a bas mitzvah, and they totally forgot. And the mother of the bas mitzvah girl basically called at 9:30, frantic, where are you? Why aren't you here? My daughter's hysterical. You guys were supposed to be here. And they rushed over. Within like 5 minutes, they were all there. And then they danced and sang and helped clean up until way over midnight. And the daughter turned to the mother and said, thank God I did not go to that party. Because if I would have gone, I would have missed this, and they never would have forgave me. Now, this girl doesn't have the strongest connection with Hashem, and she hasn't said Baruch Hashem in many years. So the preparation that she had of learning to accept things the way they are, and then seeing right away, I said to her, I said, Hashem gave you such a chesed that you were able to see right away the cause and the effect of not going to this party and why you didn't go to the party. And she was blown away by the situation. These things happen to us all the time. And our job is to recognize it and recognize that it's coming from Hashem for a reason. Challenges are sent to us in order for us to grow. Hashem wants us to go from one level to another level. It's like in school. You take a test, it's challenging, it's hard, you study, but you pass and you go to the next level, you go to the next chapter, you go to the next grade, go to college, whatever it is. You need challenges in order to grow. Otherwise, you don't feel accomplished, you don't feel that it's special, you don't feel proud. So when we're going through a challenge, if we look at it in a way that it is going to somehow make me a better person, or it's going to make me a stronger person, or it's going to give me strength to help others or myself or my children or my family, whoever, I think by doing that, we allow ourselves to accept the challenge and take on the challenge. It says, I think in Gerusha Ramban, it talks about how if a person doesn't have any challenges for 30 days, you should daven to Hashem, because that means Hashem's not thinking about you. And Mesil Shisharim talks about how the challenges are given to us in order for us to grow closer to Hashem. Hashem wants to see, okay, you say that you could do all this and it's okay. Now let's see if I throw this in your face. How are you going to react to this? And every person has the challenges that their neshama, that their life, that person needs. It's very dangerous for people to look at other people's lives and say, well, why do they have a life like that? Why can't I have a life? Why do they have children that are so good? Why are my children so difficult? Why do they, you know, have a beautiful house? And it's so dangerous to do that, because you are not them. Hashem gives us challenges that are for our neshama, for the time that we're in that part of our life, whether it's from childhood to being an older person. Whatever challenge you are given, it is a challenge that Hashem picked for you. And Hashem is the only one that knows if you passed that challenge, if you met that challenge. Sometimes people feel like, I failed a test, I really didn't do the best, you know, I didn't do what Hashem wanted from me. You don't know that. Hashem is the one that judges us. Hashem is the one that knows everything. And if we have that perspective and we have that outlook, when a challenge comes our way, A, we'll be prepared, and B, we'll actually be appreciative. I mean, there was one day that I had, from my kids locking the keys in the car to the engine light going on in the car not starting once AAA came, to my kid forgetting their lunch and going back to the city. I'm telling you, there were like 8 things that happened within 3 hours. And every time something happened, I said, bring it on, no problem. I am not going to break. You are not going to break me. And maybe I look at it as a joke and I play with it and I, you know, try to make fun when a challenge comes my way. That's the way I deal. That's the way I deal. But we need to figure out, how can you tackle and accept the challenge? I have a son who's autistic, and he just had his bar mitzvah. K'nai Nahara, we never dreamt that he would have a bar mitzvah like he did. He had one of the hardest parshas, and he didn't make one mistake. I was like, thank God none of his service people are here, because they would have taken away all services. I mean, K'nai Nahara, he did amazing, and his speech was beautiful, and the kid has not missed. Since Purim, he has not missed one minyan. He doesn't go to Jewish school, so he has to wake up earlier to go to shul. He has not missed a shachris, a mincha, or a mariv since his bar mitzvah. And it's not from us. We don't tell him to do it. It's within him. And we realize that Hashem literally blessed us with this kid. This kid is the biggest bracha that could have happened to our family. He has taught us so much. He has given us such a different perspective in life. And by having him, I've been able to help so many people with the same type of issues and challenges, and help them get the services they need, whatever it is. And yes, when he was 2, 3, 4 years old, it was very difficult. And sometimes I would turn to Hashem and say, why? Why did you give me this challenge? What? I'm not strong enough. I can't do this. And my mother or my husband or my father would give me the strength I need to continue doing what I needed to do. And then I got back on the path. Doesn't mean that when you have a challenge and you give up or you don't react properly that you've completely failed. It's about acknowledging, okay, no, I got to do this. I can do this. And then get back on track. Don't throw your hands up and say, I'm done. I just want to end off with one thing that Mrs. Krauss was saying, how a person, the importance of davening and the importance of having a relationship and the importance of having preparation for something. What I express to a lot of teenagers who have a very, strong difficulty in understanding the importance of davening, as adults do as well, I basically tell them like this. If your grandparents, if your mom or dad never told you to call your grandparents, would you ever call them? And they're like, probably not, maybe just for their birthday or something like that. I said, do your parents make you call? Yeah. Often? Yeah. What is the point of having that phone call with your grandparent? And they said, because it builds a relationship. I said, exactly. So when we dive into Hashem, we're building a relationship. Whether we see the benefit or the outcome of that relationship, that's regardless. We are putting effort in a relationship that when Chas v'Shalom, you end up, having your first baby and unfortunately it doesn't end up living, you're not a stranger to Hashem. You're not calling on Hashem only in hard times. It's your phone line is on speed dial. And Hashem knows who you are. And if we don't reach out to Hashem, we're not going to receive what we want. Hashem wants us to reach out to him. He waits for us to reach out to him. He desires us to reach out to him. And it's so simple. It's all we have to do is reach out to him, and it allows us to not have challenges, but to be able to deal with the challenges. And I give you all a bracha that whatever challenges come your way, you should be able to find the strength inside of you that you'll be able to lift yourself up and conquer that challenge with the strength that Hashem knows that you have. Because if you didn't have that strength, Hashem would not be giving you that challenge.
Fabulous. Okay. And now I'm going to introduce Mrs. Miriam Gross. She's a marriage and family therapist. She works in many of the local Orthodox schools. Many of you might know her. Her specialties include teens and addictions. And she's a woman with a wealth of knowledge and much to share. Please welcome Mrs. Miriam Gross.
I figured it's really great to be the third one to speak because everything was said already and I don't really have to say anything. So I just want to clarify because I always get that question. A marriage and family therapist is like a psychologist, okay? And you don't have to be married and you don't have to have a family to come to see a therapist. So I just wanted to clarify that. I actually see mostly teens and adults. And I work in you mentioned I work in many of the schools. Maybe I know some of your children, but I don't know that you are the parents. So thank you for giving me the schools to work with them. It's not working? Oh, I'm sure it's not working, in case you didn't notice. It's all my fault? Okay. All right. Okay. I have to be closer. How about if I talk without a mic? I have a loud voice. Yeah? Okay. One of the things, I'm actually going to talk very different because you kind of said a lot already. I'm going to talk a little bit about this week's Parsha. And we know in this week's Parsha, the name of the Parsha is very significant because it connects to everything that is in the Parsha. But really, when we just look at the names are not just easily picked. There's a reason for the name. And when we look at the name, it's Kairach. And Kairach is not a living example, real kind of, for us. You know, it's not, he did a big rebellion, and not only that, he didn't even do tshuva. His children did tshuva. So why do we name a parsha after someone who did such a big rebellion? And really the answer is that we have to look a lot deeper. Because what was Kairach's taina? What was his complaint? That he wanted to be on a level of a Kayan Gadol. And a Kayan Gadol is the highest ruchniyastige level a Yid can be on to be closest to the Eibishter. So this was really his taina. What is wrong with being on the highest level? And really, when we look at it from this perspective, we see the positive in it. And this, I remind myself so many times, because one of my specialties, like I mentioned, is teens. And many times the parents are happy, like, okay, take him for an hour, you know? They're like happy that he speaks to, or she speaks to somebody, you know? Or, you know, kids get sent to me. But really, I want to tell you, when you look and you peel off all those layers, they're wonderful children and they're wonderful people. And you know what? Yes, there are challenges maybe to us, but the truth is we always have to find the positive in it. And when we are finding the positive, we are connected and we can move forward. So just like it is in this week's Parsha, let's hope that we can all find the positive and move forward and grow.
And does this pull out?
Good. Okay, so we're going to do a few of the questions. We're going to take we're going to start with a couple of questions that were already sent in. And then we can open it to questions that you might have about dealing with challenges. The issue with that, however, we're thinking we could put everything on an index card so that it would be anonymous and whatever. We just don't have time for that kind of thing. So in posing your question, even as you're, if you're thinking of it now, if you can think of saying it in a way that doesn't say, my husband leaves his smelly socks on the floor, what do I do? Okay? Because then everyone's going to think, oh, there's the guy who has his smelly socks on the floor. Okay? So, you know, if you can figure out a way to sort of make it a general question. Question, just so it's a little bit more sneeze. Okay, but I'm going to pose the first question. Oh, yeah, good. Okay, hold on a second. Yeah, very good. So we're going to start with a question that might be an issue for many people. How to stay positive while under financial stress? So does somebody want to handle that? Okay.
Can I talk without a mic? No. You can't hear me? Okay. Oh, okay. I'm sorry. All right. It really is a question of who earns the money in your house on the financial stress, because I want to tell you, which probably in most of the households, is the husband is the main, provides the main income. And for a man, what happens is his providing for the family is equal to self-esteem. And it really, they define themselves as who they are by providing for the family. And it makes it very, very difficult. So you have really two aspects that are going on for the most part is, one, the financial stress, because how are you going to pay bills if you and maybe making so much less money right now, or you're not having any income at all, and depleting your savings if you do have anything like that. Plus, your husband is probably going to be in a bad mood for most of the time or for a lot of the time. So you're really juggling a lot, and then you have to keep up the family. So you have to remember that the woman is considered the Akeres HaBayis. She's the Iker in the house. And the first thing you want to do is, and I know this sounds selfish, but really maybe figure out where you are standing. Now, just because you're feeling overwhelmed and you're feeling frustrated doesn't mean that you are not going in the ways of Hashem or you're not listening to what the Eibishter is telling you. On the contrary, think of it like this. On a physical body, if you're cooking by your stove, and it's really, really hot, you are pulling away your hand because it's too hot. You feel the steam. And really, this is a very good thing that your nervous system is picking up that pain. Because if it wouldn't pick up that pain, you would look at your hand and your hand would melt. So it's a good thing that you're feeling. So what do you do with those feelings? Well, hopefully you have good friends, or you have a Rebbetzin, or you have a shir, you take a walk. There's all different ways that we know that we can take care of ourselves. But now you really need to nurture the financial situation. For the financial situation, I can only tell you, go to somebody that is an expert in this. And unfortunate, now there is not just a few, but there are many people who need help with this. So that's really just for the financial aspect that you can get the help. The emotional help that you need, you're going to have to get from your friends, because you might not have money to go to see a therapist. So, or you can go where? Jewish Family Services. Right. Yeah, but they also charge quite a bit already. I shouldn't say that in the microphone. But yeah, it's not that simple. And people have the idea also, okay, so I'm going to go speak to somebody, and you know what? I'm going to feel better. Sometimes you end up actually feeling worse because you're saying the way you're feeling, but you will feel better the next day. Sometimes you do feel better, and it really gave you a lot of chizuk. So you really have to know yourself, and you know you have to tune in. And running from one person to the next to talk, this one I talked to on Monday, and that one on Thursday, and the next one on Tuesday, is also not helpful. Because somebody out there is that you come to, and you're going to hear, that they're going to hear from you, day after day after day, they're going to realize the gravity of how you're handling the situation. And people have done this, that they've gone to all different places. There's nothing wrong going to different places, but somebody has to hold it together. And it actually has backfired very, very badly when people just give bits and pieces information to different people. It doesn't mean that you can only or are allowed to only talk to one person. Try to keep it calm in your house.
Can you clarify what you mean? In other words, they're getting a little bit of information from this one and this one. I'm not sure I understand you.
Oh, okay. That's when people go, they'll speak to, let's say, a Rebbetzin on Monday, and they'll speak to a close friend on Thursday, and then they're going to speak to the principal on next week. And they have somebody else in the community that they're speaking to the following week. They keep on sailing around and giving information. But really, if one person would hear how they're feeling on Monday and on Thursday and on Tuesday and the following week and so on, they would realize that there is a much more gravity in the situation, that it is much more difficult for them. And people tend to do that, I noticed, because it's very difficult to self-disclose, and especially money is a topic that we don't like to talk about, and we don't like to think about it. And
so the advice is to find one person who can do something and talk to them. Is that the...
Take one person. You can incorporate others, but there's one person who, so to speak, has to hold all your pain together. And that's really... more helpful, because they will understand more of what is going on.
Okay. Did you have anything you want to add to that?
I'm good. Resolved all financial
issues. Okay. There we go. Okay, we'll take one more question here, and then we'll open it up to questions. All right. I found out that a family member has a serious illness. How do I stay realistic and positive at the same time when I'm around the sick family member, and even more so when I'm alone with my thoughts?
Do you want to clarify the question?
I think it's just I'm just extrapolating. They have a family member who's ill, and they're trying to deal with it with themselves in their own head of why did this happen to me, you know, their family member being sick, and also how to interrelate. So I think it's two questions. One is how to manage their own thoughts in their own head, and the other part of it is, the other aspect is how to deal with their loved one who is ill. So this is basically answering, dealing with life's challenges.
So I have a brother who almost 8 years ago, 7.5 years ago, he was in a car accident. He lives in Beit Shemesh, and he was driving someone to the airport, and a drunk driver hit him, and both of his legs were amputated. So I kind of call him my half-brother now because he doesn't have legs. But again, that's how I deal. Within 20 hours, I was by his bedside. He was in a coma. And I went to help my sister-in-law and their six kids with their infant. I went with my infant, my Avi, who's turning 8, Emet Hashem. And my initial reaction when it happened was, what are you talking about? This can't be. I freaked out, crying, hysterical. And then I took a Tehillim and just started saying Tehillim and making all these netters that, please Hashem, you can't let this happen. Why are you picking him? Why this? Why that? And to ask why, knowing that you really aren't going to get an answer, is good. As long as you're not really expecting an answer to pop in front of your face. But to connect to some source of strength is probably one of the most effective ways to dealing with any challenge, no matter if it's a person who's sick or it's finances or it's a marriage relationship, whatever it is. It's about finding that source of strength that you have or that someone around you has that you can connect to. And then realize that it's not about you right now. It's about the person who's actually sick. And when I finally calmed down, I said to myself, what are you doing? This is your brother who has a wife and children, and they need you. You need to be the strong one. You need to be the calm one. You need to snap out of this and do what you got to do. Action. So my advice from my personal experience is to take yourself out of the situation and not think so much about why me, why my family, I'm so embarrassed, I can't be around them, it makes me uncomfortable. It's not about you. And when you take yourself out of it and you're thinking about the person and what they're going through and what you could do for them, A, you come out a much stronger person, and B, you get to deal with the issue without it breaking you and breaking your relationship. So.
Okay. All right. So is there somebody who thought of a question that they can phrase in a sort of sneeze way, make it a little general?
Okay. I just want to follow up on the last question. Your thoughts, right? Your thoughts are racing, racing, racing. Now, let's say it has nothing to do with an illness, and it's just your thought in general. I know I just had my first baby, so, it's like a lot of, thoughts running through my head. What if this happens? What if that happens? What if that? And it's personal because it's me, but, it's like, how do you take that aside? Because it's in you.
Excellent question. Did people get the question? You could hear it over there? Yeah. Okay. So.
So, whether you're from or not, whether you're religious, observant, whatever your background is, in general, when we have thoughts that are constantly racing in our head, that could turn into a very negative, it could basically blow up, and it could create your stress, your health, sleeping, and all that. So whether it's about finances, or it's about this illness, or it's about your child that you're like freaking out, like, I can't let him sleep by himself, or do I put him on his stomach, on his back, or, you know, is the blanket going to suffocate him, chas v'shalom, or is he going to choke on the pacifier? You need to stop, and you need to self-talk. You need to talk to yourself. And today, you could talk to yourself in the car. No one's going to think you're crazy. They'll think you're on your Bluetooth or something, so don't worry about that. You have to say to yourself, okay, what's your name?
Naomi.
Naomi, come on. You're being crazy. Just stop. Okay? And at the end of the day, is it in my hands? No. So what am I going crazy? When you do that, you kind of like, oh, yeah, no, that's kind of silly. So self-talking helps with the racing thoughts and stuff.
I just wanted to say it's very overwhelming to have your first baby. I don't know if you have any support around you in terms of parents or anything like that. And you know what? Sometimes it's normal and then you stop it. That's it. You know? I don't want to say what they say, but I'll say it anyhow. Have more kids. You'll stop worrying.
That's true. You're worrying now. Wait until they get older. That makes you feel so great, right?
That's terrific. Okay, good. So anybody else? Let's see. You have a question? Yeah. Anything? I have a bunch here. I can turn to these if nobody has a question. No. Okay. I'll ask one more another one from here. Okay. When there are so many letdowns and rejections in the shidduch world, how do you stay optimistic when it's tempting to not let your hopes get too high? So I think this question is basically saying, you know, how do you stay optimistic and upbeat and then just to get let down again and again and again? Okay.
Is this a question as a parent or is this a question as a...
I think it's as a single person. When there's so many letdowns and rejections. Yeah, it could be both. And the mother, right, or the father, but yeah.
You know what, I think what a person has to do is, this is, by the way, the question that I said I wasn't going to answer, because I Kanainahara made 3 shidduchim in a year and a half, and I have no clue what I did, okay? You daven a lot, you say tillim, you try your best, you know, you make phone calls, and when you stand under the chuppah, you can truly feel the Eibushter standing there. You can truly feel Ruchnius. And for those ones who had married off kids, maybe they can identify with me. But really, you just try and try and, you know, then you know it's right. And I don't know why. I'll be very honest with you. And I spoke to somebody who married off all their 14 kids, Kanainahara, and she says, well, by my 14th, I for sure knew I don't know what I have to do. So, you know, what you do want to do when you do get to it is make sure that Beruchnius, everything is set up right, because the Gashmius will follow. But the question was really about the rejection. And I think in general, it is how do you take rejection in life? If you are a person who is more upbeat and takes more an inside-outside approach, you have to really... be inside, because you're feeling, and it's you, and you're supposed to feel. That's a good thing. But you have to step outside, and you have to say, what does the Eibushter want for me in this situation? So when you get rejected, for example, a shidduch offer, depending on how you're taking this question, really, because I come from a family where we did not let our children go out with a lot, I'm not saying on a lot of dates, but with a lot of people. We were very selective. Like I said to my kids jokingly, but I really meant it. I said, between my husband and I, whatever we checked out, I said, if you want to have a date with a girl that comes up, because I have mostly boys, I said, you know, you can have one every week, every 2 weeks, whatever you want. I said, if you want to go out with a girl that is shayach for you to get married, you're going to get very few dates. And this is really the shitta. This is the way we do it in our house. So my we rejected and we got rejected quite a number of times. Of course, I think that my kids are wonderful. But you know what? Sometimes the Shatran will call out, oh, I'm so sorry, you know, they didn't want. And I'm like, no, I'm very happy. I didn't have to say no, one closer to the right one and weiter, you know, because if it's meant to be, it's going to come again. Like I said before, I made 3 shidduchim very fast, one after the other one. So who am I really to talk? But I do want you to know that my oldest son got married is 26, my other one 24. My daughter was young. She was 19 when she got married. But like we also weren't in a rush. And like I said, it's how you take rejection. Do you sometimes feel frustrated? Yes, of course, we feel frustrated from time to time in life. But this is part of life. And we don't just disconnect from it. Because if you look in Tehillim, if you would take out all the psukim where people are crying to the Eibishter, where people are upset, people are frustrated, we would be left with much less of Tehillim. You know, it wouldn't be 150 kapitlach. So this is part of life. This is part of us. This is part of what defines us. And we have to consistently ask, how can I grow? Maybe I'm not realistic with my expectations. Sometimes I find that parents are not realistic with their expectations for their children. They are looking for a shidduch that's for them, but they forget that they are married already. They need to look for a shidduch for their daughter or for their son, what's befitting for them. And I think that's what sometimes kind of puts a blockage to it, too.
Outstanding. Very good. And actually, I'll add 2 points to it. One point is that, using the analogy of baseball, when a baseball player, Babe Ruth, or I don't know, that's the only one I remember, Babe Ruth gets up to bat, he's always optimistic, like he's going to hit a home run. He's struck out 4,000 times, but when he goes up to bat, he's happy, he's smiling, he's looking at that ball, waiting for it to come over the fence. If he thought about all the shidduchim that didn't work out, all the balls that he didn't hit, and he gets up to hit, and like, oh, just all dejected, then when the home run comes across the plate, he's not even going to try for it. So that's the first point. And the second point is that if you understand that the shidduch process is horrible, okay, if you just understand that from day one, that it's a horrible roller coaster ride, and you're expecting that, and you know that this is just going to be hard, and then at the end, I'll be married, maybe that'll help you through. To feel like you're just doing it again, and it'll never come to fruition, that's what makes it so frustrating. So if you just know that, and daven to Hashem. Okay, let's go to the next. Is there someone else who had a question, or do you want me to take one of these? Question? I want to get your story in. You want to give that now, and then, yeah, you had that story. Didn't you have another? Maybe you tell your story, and then we'll finish up. You had one other story.
Okay, it was just really follow up with some of the things that we were talking about. A niece of mine, a few years ago, lost her first baby. He was 14 months old. She was by the babysitter, and she got a telephone call from her husband. Something happened, and Hatzalah came, and they called her to the hospital. So when she came to the hospital, they said they were working on the baby, and the doctor asked my niece, how far away do your parents live? And she said, about an hour and a half. So he said to my niece's husband, I think it's a good idea for you to call your wife's parents. Obviously, what was happening was they didn't think that that child was going to make it, and he wanted to make sure that my niece had a support system. My brother came, and I'll continue with the fact when I went to New York to see my niece, because she was sitting Shiva. So as soon as I walked in, she said to me, Tanta Fermi, did you hear all the Hashgacha Pratis that happened? I couldn't believe I was hearing what I was hearing. I mean, it's my young niece. She's 20 years old. She just lost a 14-month-old. And what is she saying to me? Did you hear all the Hashgacha Pratis that happened? No. She goes, it's unbelievable. I can't even believe it, But like when Hashem was giving me a patch at the exact same time, he was orchestrating, helping me in every single other way. And she proceeds to tell me all the pieces that worked out, where her husband was, he usually is somewhere else. My brother in the last 10 years has been in Lakewood 3 days during any time during the last like 10 years. He never is in Lakewood unless he's coming for some reason. My brother lives in Brooklyn. When my niece's husband called my brother and said, "We need you here. Something happened to Avrami," my brother said, "I'll be right there." And he was. He walked in, and the doctor said, "Don't you live an hour and a half away?" And he said, "Yes. I just happened to be on the next block because I was in Deal, New Jersey. That was 20 minutes from here. And I decided to do something in Lakewood because it's so close, and I just came." And I got the phone call. And then she proceeded to tell me how every step of the way, her mother gets phone calls from so many people to give them rides to Lakewood. She's a balas chesed par excellence. So everybody that needs a ride to Lakewood always calls her. She has a whole list on the wall, and she always helps people find rides. The day she got the phone call from my nephew and was told that she should come to Lakewood, her first reaction was, "Where are my keys?" And then she realized her husband took the car. So she ran to her list. She called the first person. And she goes, "Hello, I need a ride to Lakewood." He said, "Oh, I happen to be going now." And she said, "Really? Are you going now? Where are you? I'll come. I'll get there." He said, "Where do you live?" She told him where she lives. And he said, "I'm 2 blocks away. I'll stop by. Are you ready now?" She goes, "I'm ready now." She got into the car, and he noticed when he looked in the rearview mirror that she was sitting with her hand over her eyes and davening, and she looked like a little intense, like something was happening. He stepped on the pedal, and he got to Lakewood in less than an hour. There was no traffic. And this is my niece telling me all these stories while she's sitting Shiva for her child. There was a woman sitting in the room, who was obviously not religious and not from the Frum community. And the woman said, as my niece was telling me this, and the woman looks at her and she goes, "How are you like this? This is unbelievable. How are you like this?" My niece said, "What do you mean?" She goes, "Well, I lost a child like 7 years ago. I'm still in therapy. I haven't been able to go back to work. I can't pull my life together. I haven't lived a day since." And my niece said, "Well, it's in my mother's milk. It's in my DNA. My parents raised me like this. We always talk about Hashgacha Pratis in our house. Every time we sit down for dinner, we're always talking about all the brachos that Hashem gives us. And we're always schmoozing about emunah and bitachon stories. So that somehow, even though this is really very difficult for me, and I'm sure I'm going to be doing a lot of crying when I get home, it really is helping me because I grew up with this. It's part of my life." So though not everybody grows up this way, though my niece was very lucky to be in that type of family, everybody could infuse themselves. That's why I said during good times, during happy times, we need to strengthen ourselves by reading, by listening, going to Sheyorim, and so that when tough times do come, as they do come to people, we should be strong enough to be able to navigate, deal, and remain happy, and not just, unfortunately, like give up on life and fall apart and not be able to enjoy the rest of life. Life has a lot of good things to offer. Baruch Hashem, she's a mother of 4 other kinderlach, and they're doing great.
There's a last question, and then we're going to end for the night. Anybody have a question? Okay, we want to thank you ladies very much. Thank you so much. All the time. Yeah, good. Thank you very much, everybody, for coming tonight.